So, good evening. Good to be back here. Good to be in person. My, whoa. Very, very nice. And I was very inspired by a retreat that I just finished teaching yesterday on the four qualities of the awakened heart: loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And personally, what inspired me the most was joy, or mudita, and equanimity. And these are not taught very often as practices, so I thought that I would teach on mudita, or sometimes called appreciative joy, this evening, and then next week, I think I'll be online, teach on equanimity. Because it was just very inspiring, and appreciative joy is also connected with themes like gratitude. So very wonderful. And because we'll be doing practices that are not simply mindfulness practices, which everyone does, I thought that it would work better to give the talk first, introduce mudita and joy, and then do the meditation, and then have discussion. So it'll be a little bit different sequence, or quite different sequence than usual, but one that makes sense. You know, introducing a theme, we meditate on it, we talk about it. Pretty straightforward. Okay. I love this teaching coming from the Buddha called the teaching of the divine abodes, or the Brahma Vihara. Brahma is the name of the king of the gods, as many of you know, in the India of that time, and Vihara is simply the term meaning home or house. So when we're doing these practices, loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity, it's actually as if we are gods and goddesses. So are you ready to be a god and goddess tonight? Or goddess, your choice. Okay. And there are these four flavors. There's really one awakened heart, but there are four flavors to them. And loving kindness is the best known of these, taught the most often. And it's really the sense of goodwill and friendliness and warmth, just the general way that the heart presents itself when it's awake to the world. When that awakened heart encounters something difficult or painful, it becomes compassion. Compassion isn't different fundamentally from loving kindness. It's a different flavor of the awakened heart. And when that awakened heart encounters something wonderful or beautiful or something going well for someone, it becomes mudita, which is said to be appreciative joy, joy in the joy of others. And then the equanimity is that which holds everything and can just be with everything with balance. I think of it like the nature of a wise grandmother who has seen everything. Nothing phases her, but they're still caring. She has balance and equanimity, but they're still caring. So these are the four. And like I say, I just finished teaching a week on all four of them and doing practices, and I was inspired. And originally I was going to teach something else tonight, but I said, this is really inspiring me, so I'm going to teach the two that are probably the least known, mudita and equanimity practice, both as a perspective and then as a way of practicing. And that's where we have the handout for when we start practicing. The practice itself is done by deliberately tuning in to what's going well with others and with oneself. Traditionally, it was thought that one wouldn't do the appreciative joy practice with oneself. That would be too self-centered. That was what was thought, a few thousand years ago. But in our time, we think it's a very good idea to connect with one's own joy, which we can do in different ways, including gratitude. And we call it appreciative, sometimes sympathetic joy, because it's a kind of tuning in to the joy or what's going well for someone else, and then later for ourselves. And there's a kind of resonance, like sympathetic, like a sympathetic resonance, like with a stringed instrument. It's that sense of resonance. I tune in to the joy of others, and I can feel it. And I think it's a very powerful practice for anyone who has any tendencies towards what we call the negativity bias. Do you know the negativity bias? The tendency to glom on to what's not working, or the problem in a situation, rather than the positive. Anyone have that tendency? I think most of us, right? So this practice really goes against that. That can manifest in being judgmental or just being overly critical and so forth. So it's a wonderful practice. When I teach on transforming the judgmental mind, I strongly recommend people do mudita or gratitude practice. Very, very helpful. Do it a lot. And the other tendency which mudita practice reverses is the tendency to focus on one's own happiness. The Dalai Lama once said, if you actually can have joy from the joy of others or the what's going well for others, you increase your chances for happiness and joy by a factor of 8 billion. Not to mention non-human beings. And one of the reasons I was really inspired by this was a few years ago, I was teaching a version of the Brahmavihara retreat online. And I think it was during the beginning part of the pandemic. And I didn't have my usual exercise, which is swimming. Some of you know that I swim, and when I swim, I do metta all the time when I swim, one being per lap. Very nice, sort of have the metta phrase come every time my right arm comes through. Anyway, but I was inspired, and teaching the mudita, I would take walks around my neighborhood for exercise, and I found myself doing mudita practice, particularly with plants, trees, bushes, flowers, and I go around and I say, may you continue to blossom. May you continue to do well. And something was just really resonant with that. I loved it. And I still do it. It really caught on. Every time I take a walk, I find myself doing mudita practice with the plants. Also with people. And I found during the height of it, when I was doing it, I would also do mudita practice with automobiles. May you continue to run well. And so it really, part of the reason I'm giving the talk, that it's been very inspiring in that way. And during the last week, when I would take walks, I would do the same thing. And I loved it. And every time I take a walk now, anywhere, it's mudita, especially for plants. People too, but a lot of times they're more plants than people. So, and it's a wonderful balance, because sometimes it seems that the message we get from Buddhist practice is mostly about suffering. You know, there's the truth of suffering, the cause of suffering, the end of suffering, and the way to the end of suffering. That's a way that the Four Noble Truths are sometimes summarized. And a lot of emphasis on suffering. It's almost like life is really difficult, a lot of suffering, and then you die. It can sometimes seem to be a little bit of a gloomy message, even though the Buddha was known as the happy one. And I think there's a lot of joy and happiness. And I was thinking about this. I was thinking about the Dalai Lama, because I'd met him a few times, and he seems to be full of joy. Has anyone met the Dalai Lama? Or anyone maybe seen him on video? Probably some of you have done that. And he's very humorous. My sister went to graduate school at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, and to support herself, she had a job as a waitress in Ann Arbor. And one day, the restaurant where she worked was visited by the Dalai Lama. And she got to wait on the Dalai Lama and a bunch of monks. And she said that they were just laughing and giggling the whole time, just full of joy, right? And I've seen that. I've been with him personally twice. And I have a picture of him holding my hand. I have to find where that is. That's a good picture to have nearby. I don't know where it is. Oh, I got to find it. Okay. And one time, I remember, I was at a talk by the Dalai Lama, and he was going through 4 points. And he went through point number one, did that thoroughly. Point number two, did that thoroughly. Then he went to point number four. He skipped point number three. He started on point number four, and then just a short time later, he said, "Ooh!" I'm going to try not to do the accent. That's a little... can be a little bit awkward. But he said, basically he said, "Oh, I skipped number three. Ha ha ha." And he laughed at himself for about 30 seconds. A line from the Buddha: drink deeply, live in serenity and joy. Drink deeply, live in serenity and joy, which are really the qualities that we'll be looking at. Next week, I'm going to do equanimity. And keep the hand out, because it has mudita practice on one side, equanimity on the other. And in fact, we actually, I think, really... can't really go into joy unless we're willing to sometimes go into what's painful. So it's kind of a balance. And that's what you find in these teachings on the four qualities of heart. There's a balance between being able to go into compassion when something is difficult is happening, and being willing to touch what's painful. And how I think only when you do that does joy really open up. Otherwise, the joy is based on suppression of what's painful. And it's a little bit, controlled almost, or not so full. And it's also joy is so crucial when we are going through difficult times or with difficult circumstances. I was thinking of the role of music and song in the civil rights movement, right? The way that really significant, or in the labor movement, the way that song and really being joyful in that way is really, really crucial. In some traditions, joy is taken to be part of the very nature of reality. Some of you may know that in Hindu tradition, there's a saying that the basic nature of reality is Sat Chit Ananda. Ananda is joy or bliss. Being, knowing, and joy is the very nature of reality, that there's a quality of joy there. Isn't that interesting? It's not just a human emotion, per se. And in the Buddha's teaching, he says it's part of the very nature of awakening. Joy is in its form as piti, or joy or rapture, bliss. It's one of the factors of awakening. So what is joy, and what makes joy hard? You know, what for you stands in the way of joy? What comes to mind? Anyone want to share? What makes joy hard?
Fear.
Fear.
Envy.
Huh?
Envy.
Anger.
Envy.
Envy, yeah.
Obligations.
What?
Obligations.
Obligation.
Self-consciousness.
Self. Self-consciousness, yeah, yeah. Or maybe I'll mention a few others that occurred to me. Being caught in the conceptual mind overly, that will block joy. Being judgmental, maybe a rigidity in our being. And I think there also are cultural pressures or forms of cultural conditioning that make joy harder. I remember working with someone who was told that as a child, or was told as a child, wipe that smile off your face. Does anyone have something similar happen at times? Yeah. Don't smile so much. Well, There's a poem which some of you may know from William Wordsworth, which is called An Ode to Intimations of Immortality from Recollections of Early Childhood. Some of you probably know that poem. And it's about the joy that was experienced as a child. There was a time when meadow, grove, and stream, the earth in every common sight, to me did seem apparelled in celestial light, the glory and the freshness of a dream. It is not now as it has been of yore. Turn wherever I may by night and day, the things which I have seen, I can now see no more. It's sad, right? That's how many can have a sense of a tremendous joy from childhood? Right? And what happens? Why don't we keep that? That's a deep question. I'm not going to try to answer it. You know, and probably it's culture, culturally bound. So we develop more access to joy in the mudita practice. So I'll just say a little bit more, and then we'll practice it, and then we'll talk together. Okay? Literally, mudita means to be pleased, to have a sense of gladness. The Buddha said that mudita is the mind, the liberation of the mind and heart by gladness. This is taking to something not just developing a nice feeling, but actually liberating and freeing. Okay, you heard it. You can hang out with joy, and it's liberating. It's not just a good time. Go take a walk with those plants and trees and so forth, and know that you're getting liberated when you take your walk. I'm joking a little bit, but actually quite serious, right? Something happens. Traditionally, mudita practice was not done with oneself. Some of the Buddhists from 2,000 years ago thought that this would develop selfishness. Most contemporary Western teachers disagree with that, and that it's very, very good to develop mudita for self, which one can do in a few ways. One of them is through gratitude, developing gratitude. I actually personally have a gratitude practice I do 4 times a day, just for like a minute at a time, where I remember 1 or 2 things I'm grateful for. Just connect with that, hang out with that. And actually, this is very, very common in many Native American traditions. From the Haudenosaunee people, who are also known as the Iroquois, they said, this is their prayer of thanksgiving. With one mind, we turn to honor and thank all the food plants we harvest from the garden. Since the beginning of time, the grains, vegetables, beans, and berries have helped the people survive. Many other living beings draw strength from them too. We gather to thank. And at times one can even be grateful for the difficult experience we say we've had. That sometimes called, do you know the phrase or the initials FOA? It's actually taught in social work these days to recognize FOAs, effing opportunity for growth. No, is it? FOG, sorry. Effing opportunity for growth, right? But we often, can we sometimes even be grateful for the difficult experiences through which we learned, right? So in a moment, we'll do practices the way we, you know, maybe I'll wait to explain this till right before we go there. But one thing that's powerful about joy, not only do we perhaps have gratitude for what we've learned from difficult experiences, but we can actually have joy at times in the midst of difficult experiences. Does anything come to mind for people when I say that? Yeah. I was thinking of one time when I was on retreat. I think I was basically very happy and even joyful to be on retreat. And one morning I woke up, I hadn't slept well. I didn't feel good in my body. I was irritated, sleepy, and I was so joyful. just to be doing practice at the retreat. Interesting, yeah. I can't say this happened a lot when I've had those situations, but that was very striking that particular day. And, you know, from a monk who lived in Thailand, who lived by himself in a cave, and he actually died in the cave, and afterwards they found a painting in the cave, and it was of a kind of a beaming monk, and the words underneath the painting were, "Oh joy, that there is no lasting happiness." A little radical, huh? Right. Not my usual mind. And I was thinking of the way that we find that sense of joy quite often in traditions in which there's been a lot of suffering. You know, I was thinking of, there's a line from, or actually a little song or poem, some of you may know, from the 18th century Hasidic teacher Nachman of Breslau, Jewish Hasidic teacher. And he said, I know the tune, but I think I won't sing it now. He said, "Friends, do not despair. A difficult time has come upon us. Our joy must fill the air. We must not lose our joy of living. We must not despair, for a difficult time is upon us. Our joy must fill the air." It's coming from, you know, pogroms and major oppression. It's trying to stay connected with joy in the middle of that. Or I think of African-American blues is very much like that. There can be a sense of joy even as one is talking about painful experiences. Yeah. The philosopher and activist Cornel West said that blues artists express righteous indignation with a smile and deep inner pain without bitterness or revenge. Ultimately, there can be a kind of joy in being. This is from an Eskimo woman shaman named Uvavnuk. She says this: "The great sea has sent me adrift. It moves me as the weed in a great river. Earth and the great weather move me, have carried me away, and move my inward parts with joy." Just in being with the earth, with what we call nature, a sense of joy. I think we experience that often, don't we? Just that being in the wild, how many can relate to that? Just feeling filled with joy in that situation. So let me finish just with a short reading from the Buddha. "Live in joy, in love, even among those who hate. Live in joy, in health, even among the afflicted. Live in joy, in peace, even among the troubled. Look within, be still. Free from fear and attachment, know the sweet joy of the way." Oh, maybe last one. I brought one of my favorite books, St. Francis Preaches to the Birds, from Peter Schumann, who founded the Bread and Puppet Theater. Anyone know the Bread and Puppet Theater? Wonderful place. I've gone to a lot of their shows. Anyway, we have the time, so I'm going to read the entire book to you. I'm joking some. I will read the entire book, but it's brief. Okay. St. Francis Preaches to the Birds. And I find this is about joy. This is St. Francis. It's 5 a.m. Wake up, St. Francis. He opens the window and sings, tra-la-la. He brushes his teeth. So I'm not sure about the 14th century and toothpaste and toothbrush, but anyway, he brushes his teeth and says, thank you, teeth. Gratitude practice. He washes his toes and says, thank you, toes. He gets milk. He drinks his coffee and says, thank you, coffee. He goes through the town, through the apple orchard, over the pasture, and up the hill. And the birds come flying, 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 flying. Then St. Francis preaches to the birds. Until the sun sets. Yes, until the sun sets. Good night. The entire book. So this beautiful practice of mudita can be done in a few different ways. Here you can look at the sheet, and I'll try to make this apparent. The people online won't have access to it, right?
Right. I'll post it when we post
it. Excuse me?
I'll post it when we post the talk.
Yeah, yeah. So generally, we start with someone, a being, who has a fair amount of happiness or things going well in that person's life. And we say phrases to ourselves internally, like we say metaphrases. How many people are familiar with loving kindness phrases, metaphrases? Pretty much everyone? Okay. So the mudita phrases are done similarly. And we may use lines like, you know, what we might do, we think of a person, the first one, with a lot of good things happening. And we would say something, you know, we might think for a minute, okay, what's going well in this person's life? And just take a minute and think, oh, this is happening, this is happening. And we're not trying to say that that's all there is, but we tune in to the good things. We tune into the positive. Maybe do that for a minute and bear those in mind. And then we would say, we think of the person and we would have a line like one of the ones that appears at the top. May your happiness and good fortune continue. May they increase. May you enjoy happiness and well-being. Or, I appreciate the blessings in your life. Or, I'm happy that you're happy. Or, may your blessings continue. Or, may the good things in your life continue. And the last one's from the Tibetan tradition. May you never part from the sublime bliss free from suffering. So, for the practice, we We just choose one of these that seems to resonate with us. And we would kind of keep the person in mind. And we go through a sequence where we start with someone for whom things are going quite well. Then we would go to typically to self, and we would do something like gratitude practice. We could do it in one of two ways. We could either say the same phrases to ourselves, like, may my blessings continue. That's the line that I use. May the good things in my life continue. Or we could just think, what are three or four or five things I'm grateful for? And just reflect on them. That's it. We just hang out in that way. And then we would go on to someone who is someone in our life who's someone we really have a lot of care for and maybe a lot of love, a lot of connection. And we would do the same practice with that person. Yeah, and maybe that's enough. And so that's the way the practice is done. Pretty simple, right? And you can use the sheet and just look at it as we practice. So any questions about the actual practice before we start? Is it pretty straightforward? Okay. And would it be helpful for anyone to stand up or stretch a little bit before we do this? Just take, this isn't a break, but just take 30 seconds or a minute. Okay, let's sit back down. So let's start just by doing about 5 or 6 minutes of just mindfulness practice. Whatever practice helps you to settle. Let's do about 5 or 6 minutes of that right now, okay? Taking in a lot of information, just whatever helps to be more present, to settle, about 5, 6 minutes. And now we'll go into the mudita practice. Think of the being that you'll work with. It can be a human being, or could be a pet or a tree. A being that has a fair amount of happiness or joy. Bring to mind what can be going well for this being. And then you might even have a visualization of the being. And just say the phrase to yourself, "May your blessings continue." You can give a little bit of a pause, bring the being to mind, and say that again. "May your blessings continue." We could, of the phrases, we could use either just one and repeat that continually, or possibly use two. May your blessings continue. May the good things in your life continue. And we just keep repeating this to ourselves. And with the phrases, we're inclining towards this appreciative joy. We're not demanding that it has to occur. We're really inclining towards it. And sometimes we could say the phrase, and we might notice that there is a comment. I say the phrase, and then I say, "What about me? You have more good things than me, rah, rah, rah." So that's part of the practice. So we do our best just to say the phrase, and then whatever happens, happens. But we keep on doing it. Okay? So let's take about 4 or 5 minutes with this particular being. Some people, as they do this, like to keep their hands on their heart just to have that feeling. That's optional. May the good things in your life continue. And now we'll go to mudita practice for oneself. This can be done either by saying something like the same phrase you used for the last being, for yourself, or it can be in the form of gratitude practice, simply bringing to mind what you're grateful for. You might bring 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 things to mind. We'll do this again about another 4 minutes or so. And now we'll go to one further being. Bring to mind If you are familiar with metta practice and the beings we work with in metta, this would be the one we call either the benefactor or the dear friend. If you're not so familiar, it's a being that you're close to, that you care about a lot. Can be a human being or a non-human being that you have almost entirely warm feelings towards. And typically we'd use the same phrases. You can take a minute and just bring to mind what might be going well with this being. And then we would typically use the same phrase or phrases that we've been using so far. May your blessings continue. You can have an image of the person if that's helpful. If it's helpful to keep the hand on the heart, then do that. May your blessings continue. May the good things in your life continue. About another 4 minutes with this. Ding. That was a bell. So in a moment we'll have some chance to talk together, but I want to just say one more thing about the practice, that we can do the practice formally like we just did. We can also bring it into the flow of daily life. You know, like I explained, one option, just something like what I did walking around my neighborhood, just feeling, offering good wishes, blessings in a way. May your blessings continue. May the good things continue. Can offer it to people. Can go to a public space and do that. And remembering, this is a practice. It's not designed to just always work beautifully. Sometimes stuff comes up, right? So that's important. And we could also do gratitude practice in our daily lives. Maybe do it for 3 or 4 minutes, 2 or 3 times a day. It'll impact one's life. It's powerful. Something as simple as that. They've done research on gratitude. I think a place actually, it's been researched a lot. I think some of the researchers at University of California, Davis especially, and they found that gratitude has, even a small amount, has a profound effect on one's life. And I experienced in this last retreat when I was teaching, one moment, I just started walking around my living room, and I was grateful for everything. One thing after another, I was like, I'm grateful. And I wasn't even trying to make anything happen. It was just like that. And I said, whoa, that was intense, right? And so you can do it, yeah, can do it like that. And it is a practice because we're tuning in. We're not saying, I'm going to make this happen. It doesn't always work well, but we just do our best. And the capacity develops. So let me stop there and just open up some time to any questions about the practice, about anything in my introduction to the practice, the talk. Or it could be really anything that's come up in your own meditation practice or anything about joy.
Any of you remote people, just raise your hand and I'll repeat the question.
And half-baked questions are encouraged. They don't have to be deep, profound questions that everyone would lead everyone to do. Moody to practice, may your brilliance continue. Please, yeah.
Hi, my name is Renee. So one thing for me that I found that has inhibited me from experiencing joy in myself and for others is unresolved trauma.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about, what the message that you're giving us, that we can, with deliberate practice, sometimes really override, and when we sit or when we are out and we are starting to notice things, even though we have that unresolved, all those unresolved things and issues, by implementing these practices and these tools, in a sense, it feels like I can achieve joy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So I know that, through therapy and through that type of work, we can create these new pathways of thinking.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking about how complementary that is to, or how complementary this practice is to something like that.
Yeah, no, it's a great point because, unresolved trauma. Should I repeat the question?
No.
No.
They're picking. They can hear her.
Okay. Yeah, but maybe for in the recording. Yeah, there's really a question about the way that even if there's unresolved trauma, that the practice of mudita can be significant, can really be helpful. And the best case scenario would be to continue to do work with the unresolved trauma, of course, whether with professional or some other way. But when there's trauma, it doesn't mean that joy is impossible, right? And it may be particularly related to like a particular part of one's experience. And so it can be really, really helpful to increase the level of joy, which becomes like a resource, you know. And I've had trauma training with the somatic experiencing approach, and we sometimes use the language of developing different resources, right? And this can really be having the joy more there. I don't think it in itself resolves the trauma, but it can be very, very helpful and a significant resource that can, for example, just make it clear that even with the trauma, I can have plenty of access to joy. The trauma doesn't lock me in, something like that. Yeah, is that resonating? Yeah, thank you. Yeah, please. Could you just a little louder, if that's possible?
Yeah, really horrendous stuff, but traumatic. And I spent years and years working in therapy and getting into the meditation that it helps and everything, little gratitude practice, but I went finally a year ago and did a lot of research on trauma, did the Trauma Institute, and found a therapist who only does trauma work.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's made the most incredible change.
Yeah. So something about the what?
I don't know why I only have a therapy.
Well, it's only been the last 10 years or so, maybe a little longer, that people have really got a clear understanding that trauma is stored in the body. That's key. And before that, you might be talking about it in talk therapy as if that would help, and it doesn't necessarily. That's really what you're bringing up. Unfortunately, that wasn't known 30 years ago. Yeah.
I just got it in before I get too old.
No, it happened. That was wonderful. Yeah. Please, any just request for clarification or question about the practice? Am I doing it right? Yeah. If you'd like to, I will be with the group next week. That's my plan, at least. Our plan. Anyone here like to do mudita practice for the next week for 10 minutes a day? Anyone feel drawn to that? And then you can talk about it, yeah?
Do you have a question?
Sure. I didn't hear it well.
She just shared that whatever she does, gratitude practice, she shares gratitude for you and for the Sangha.
Oh. Yeah. And you can have mudita for my shining a little bit when that was said. Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's almost like, well, it somehow works to do that.
Yeah, yeah. So sometimes what you were calling mixing and matching with the metta or the mudita. Actually, we taught at this recent retreat all four, and there are a few things which are really nice about knowing all four of them. One of them is that you can just sort of say, what does my being call for right now? And so we don't just do one, because they each have different effects, right? Gratitude's going to look different than compassion. If I'm going through a hard time, compassion may be most appropriate, right? If I'm just want to wish well for people and that feels accessible, that's great. But sometimes I may really want to really feel the joy and tune into others and so forth. And the other piece is that the four of them, when you do them together, they balance each other in a very magical way. So, for example, it's said in the teachings that each of the four has a kind of occupational hazard that needs the other three. For example, if you do loving kindness, you can get overly attached to a person, right? And you need maybe especially the equanimity. And if you're doing a lot of compassion, especially if maybe one is going through a hard time or, maybe in a kind of work where you are with a lot of pain, maybe in the helping professions or medical profession, and you're dealing with a lot of compassion, you can get burned out. And so then it's really helpful. Oh, I'm almost like bringing compassion to my work. Let me do a lot of joy practice. Okay, right, and that will balance that. And our joy practice, we get a little bit attached to the joy really being cool. And then we need a little more equanimity. And the equanimity can get a little bit aloof. That's the occupational hazard for equanimity. Then we need the joy and the compassion, especially. So they balance each other, which is, it's a beautiful, profound teaching. And so, ideally, we're doing all four of these. Yeah, that's why in the West, we've mostly taught metta. And it's really missing these others. I think it's really great to learn the others and do them. Even 5 or 10 minutes a day will go a long way.
Oh, I wanted to add to gratitude.
Yeah. Yeah, it's magical. Like I say, they've done research and shown regular gratitude practice is like, I don't know, better than taking supplements. I'm joking a little bit. But it actually has major medical benefits. gratitude practice every day. Interesting, right? Yeah, maybe time for one more if there is, then we'll finish up.
I have one here.
Okay.
All right, Rick.
Yeah, I just wanted to.
We can hear him. Right.
Hey, what?
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Did people hear that? Would it be helpful to repeat? How many? Okay. Yeah.
Oh, repeat.
Yeah, I think he was basically saying he would have wanted to be in person, but.
Apologizing for not being here in person, but he doesn't like to drive tonight.
Okay.
Rick, we are trying to organize carpools, so watch your email next time we do this.
Okay. So let's finish with our saying of metta. Yeah.
We did not do the Namos and the refuges, and since this is the first time we're together, what we can do it, I would really like to do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sarnam Gacchami.